Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Kathy Kitts, your host for the next hour on The Resilient Brain. We come to you every Saturday at noon, and we're on the air until 1 o'clock. Most of the time, we do encourage you to call into the show, and that number would be 602-753-1026. And today, however, we're having a little bit of technical difficulty, and it may not come through. So if you try to call today and it doesn't work, then my suggestion to you would be to wait until next week, and I think everything will be back in order. So as far as my weekly weather report, I can say that it is quite hot. It's going to get hotter, probably going up to about 88 degrees. Much more humid than, say, yesterday, although it's still a decent temperature, humidity rather. And when you go into the shade, you can tell because, you know, it really drops in temperature in the shade. And if it's humid, you still feel like it's really hot and sticky, even to a degree in the shade. So our forecast for today is, I believe, it's going up to about 88, which for the, you know, middle of August, I don't think we can complain too much. But it's hard to believe that there's only a couple of weeks left and until, you know, beginning of September, which everybody starts to think about school, and it seems like summer to some degree is already over. So that's the tough part. But I know I've been reading out of the Brain Matters book, and I think I will go back to that next week. However, I just thought I had a book that I caught my eye on in my abode, and it is about painting. And I know that I haven't really talked too much about things that draw from the right side of the brain, which would connect to the left side of your body. And a lot of us know that, you know, not totally, but to a large degree, the right side of your brain is not consciously used quite as much as the left side. The left side is your analytical, a lot of your language, a lot of your you know, sequential, step-by-step, one thing after another kinds of things. And the right side of your brain, which is connected to your left hand, is the way I usually remember it, is more for holistic, seeing the whole picture, the big picture, having sometimes this insight about maybe the answer to a problem all at once. It's not as much sequential as it is sort of insights in the whole way that you might understand something in a new way. So I was just going to talk a little bit about painting, and specifically a type of painting called Chinese brush painting. Now, this is the technique that Chinese brush painters use. However, there is a technique very similar that is called sumi-e, and that is the Japanese brush painting. As far as I can tell, the Japanese brush painting uses a little more black ink, less color. I might be wrong because maybe I haven't seen enough of the paintings of Japanese painters, but that's my understanding. And depending on what book you pick up for Chinese brush painting, or which YouTube video you get onto, each painter is completely different from another. So I would use my gut feeling and look inside the book, or, you know, look in the video for a bit and see if you like some of the paintings and the way this particular painting, you know, a painter has painted, because some of them I have opened up books and I've just thought, oh gosh, I really don't like that style. And so that's my first kind of caveat. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about how art and things like wavelengths affect the brain, and also sometimes things that are a little harder to define, and I'll tell you in a moment what I mean. But since I don't talk about, you know, the right side of the brain as much, a lot of those things are actually, people say, are connected to our subconscious. And that's why images come to us in our dreams, because it's more of that right side that's expressing itself. And so, but because it doesn't have a way to speak, there isn't, you know, it's not connected to the speaking side of the left side of the brain, it is difficult. And that's why sometimes when people have strokes and it affects their left side, they might be able to draw a picture or point to something, but they generally can't speak about what they're thinking about or what they want, and so it can be quite trying. But so for on a couple of fronts, I thought it would be interesting to talk a little bit about Chinese brush painting. And I really encourage you to look in a local store or art supply house, or even, you know, something like Michael's, or, you know, even things like Target and Walmart. They probably have really basic things like watercolor palettes and things like that. But if you wanted to follow along with what I'm talking about and eventually start something on your own, I really encourage you to, because, first of all, you can paint something really cool with very little, you know, effort. You just need a couple of lessons and, you know, you can have some nice colorful little bumblebee or some bamboo or, you know, a flower. I mean, it's, I think it really will make your heart sing at some level because you've accomplished something that's colorful and beautiful and looks cool, and, you know, you could frame it. I mean, so, but, you know, people paint for different reasons, and I think one of them is just to express what's in your heart, to express yourself on a soul level. And I think, you know, that might have been some of the beginning of why people turn to this. So I just really quickly wanted to say this is how easy it is. You can buy, actually, liquid ink. You don't have to get an ink stick and an ink stone, but if you are a traditionalist, you can grind your own ink, and it just takes like 3 minutes with just like a little dropper full of water. I think 1 teaspoon is what this person recommends, Lucy Wang, and she wrote the book called The Art of Chinese Brush Painting, and it's in the Artist Library series. So I never realized that it only took about 3 minutes to grind your own stone. I never had tried that, but they do have bottles, especially if you go to a Chinese bookstore, if you happen to have a Chinatown in your area, you can look there, and they have the Chinese brushes, they have ink stones, they have the liquid ink, they may even have the watercolor colors and so on. So, but that's how easy it is. Really, you just need like one small brush and one big brush, and they're pretty stiff on the end. So you can't buy a normal brush. It has to be a Chinese brush because you're going to use the whole form of the brush itself to make some of the forms that you're going to paint. So then there's the issue of paper. I would, until you feel ready, I would just practice on newspaper. Newspaper is very absorbent and very forgiving, And it actually does feel a little bit like rice paper. So I know when I started painting, I did do a lot of painting to get your basic strokes down. I did a lot on newspaper. And I actually did take a class, gosh, I can't remember how long ago. So I guess it probably would have been at least 10 or 15 years ago. And I remember the woman saying that, we were practicing bamboo, which is a couple of different strokes. And she said that we should fill up a large trash can, like, the big round trash cans that you see, well, trashmen use them or used to use them to pick up your trash in. Those kind, that size trash can that you should paint so many, newspapers that it would fill up that trash can. And that would be one way to measure, if you've put in enough time to hone your skill well enough. So, I mean, I would compare what you're producing to what is produced in the book, and the closer you get to that, that you have to have something as a reference. So, this I happen to be okay with bamboo strokes. So, but I definitely need to practice some of my other strokes. So paper, newspaper definitely, until you feel more comfortable, practice the basic strokes, practice, some basic shapes. If you want to do something in black ink just to practice, I think that's good. And then you can, I went right from newspaper to rice paper. Rice paper is what is traditionally painted on, but you can use watercolor paper. For any of you who have done any watercolor painting, there are basically three types, and that is rough cold press, and then medium texture, and then hot press, which is smooth. So it's interesting. So it seems like somebody made the same kind of stroke on the three different kinds of paper. And to me, the one that looks most like it would be useful in Chinese brush painting is on the smooth paper. But it is, highly absorbent. And you, once you feel more comfortable, you can try your hand at painting on wood or pottery or fabric or silk. So it's just two brushes, some paper, some ink, and then the last thing is a color palette. And they basically just make sure that you have like white, and then two types of all of primary colors, the primary colors being red, yellow, and blue. So get a warm red, yellow, and a cooler yellow. The same with red, warm red and a cool red, and warm blue and a cool blue. And you can actually make almost any color in the rainbow, and then some from those basic colors. But if you want, I will list what she recommends here, and you can always go back to the recording. It gets recorded into a podcast, aside from being live, and you can listen again to something you may have missed. So the list would go like this: Chinese white, lemon yellow, vermilion, crimson red, cadmium red, deep green, viridian green, ultramarine blue, cobalt blue, indigo blue, and burnt sienna. So there's a couple, I think, more than just the primary colors, but according to this painter, that might be, the basics to what you need. But just look in books and things and see what you want to practice painting, and you could just start with a couple of colors if you want. But I highly recommend looking, about the brush tips and how you hold the brush and how you place the brush on paper, that's the major thing. There's going to be a slanted hold and a vertical hold. So you're going to hold it up, just straight up and down, that's a vertical hold. And then the slanted hold is for using the brush to make different kinds of brush strokes. And, you know, since this isn't a visual medium, if I were on a television program, I could show you these pictures. It's a little hard, you know, for me to describe them. So, but I'm just going to describe one, and that is a short water drop. So basically, you would hold the brush straight up and down, and then you would pull, you put the tip down just slightly, pull it down just a bit, and then to the right just a bit, and then pick up. So it's almost like a V, which is tilted a little bit. And that's, she calls it a short water drop. And the way that you hold the vertical hold, it's the same for slanted hold, but it's like holding a pencil, except instead of your middle finger being the last, you know, in holding a pencil, you put the middle finger, your pencil rests on your middle finger. In this one, you put the brush, the first two fingers, the forefinger and the middle finger, are wrapped around the brush a little, and the thumb opposes the first finger. The ring finger, or, you know, third finger, actually is behind the brush. So they say that you use your second finger or the middle finger to pull something down, and then you can go the other way by pushing with your ring finger. So let's see. And you support your ring finger with your pinky and brace the hand with your thumb. Yeah. And your wrist tends to be raised a little bit. So it's hard to kind of, you know, create that image on a radio show. So I really wanted to just say a few words, you know, to encourage people to try this very simple art. It's simple to begin with. Of course, you can make it much more difficult by learning a whole bunch of different strokes, and you could go on to paint, you know, a lovely landscape like you see maybe in the Washington, D.C. area. We have the Freer Gallery of Art, and there are these beautiful scenes, you know, that are like 3 feet high and 2 feet wide that show like the background, the mountains. They're very stone formed mountains in the back with a fog, and then you have like a little tiny house in the forefront and maybe some water and a little tiny fisherman, you know, fishing on the water. I mean, just, you know, it takes a lot of, I think, imagination and patience to get to that level, but very, very, very beautiful in, you know, on many levels. And then, you know, the issue of color, I mean, color, if you think about the rainbow of colors, you know, those of you who've taken some basic science, you know that the abbreviation Roy G. Biv is a way to remember the order of the colors in a rainbow. So Roy is red, orange, yellow. G stands for green, and then Biv is blue, indigo, violet. And the violet end of the spectrum are the highest frequency wavelengths. You know, they possess the highest frequency. The red is the you know, longer frequency, I would say. So, you know, they're not going up and down as quickly. They're going up and down. The wavelength is going up and down more slowly and spread out, whereas the ultraviolet end would tend to be faster up and down and not as high and low, the amplitude, as the red side. So, you know, everything in life really boils down to wavelengths, because sound is part of wavelengths, light is definitely wavelength, and even things like thoughts and beliefs and opinions, they all also carry a wavelength. And we'll probably hear more and more about that as time goes on. But so it's all about wavelengths. And different colors can make you feel or help you feel a certain way depending on what your mood is that day or that month. If you've been struggling a little, you might feel better by looking at, say, some of the warm colors, red, orange, yellow. And if you're struggling and you just feel like blue, indigo, violet colors speak to you, you know, you may be at that wavelength and be a little more feeling cool or down. It doesn't necessarily mean that you can only stay in one area of the rainbow spectrum by any means. But I'm just saying that, you know, you give out certain energy depending on, well, you know, when you feel like you're in love, you're as light as air. You literally feel like, wow, you know, light as air. And you really are lighter in many respects. If you were to take some kind of a picture that would give sort of the wavelengths of what you're putting out, it would be, you know, it would describe something that is a little more buoyant and positive feeling and so on. And the opposite is true if you're feeling really down in the dumps and you just feel kind of heavy and like a weight, extra weight is on your back or just on you, or you're lifting a heavy weight, carrying some weight. You know, there's all kinds of metaphors and similes about these types. But what I was going to say is just, I think that's why there's this enduring love of classic painting or any paintings of any sort. And that's why you see on the weekends, the art galleries are mobbed. You know, of course, that's when everybody's off work, so people choose then to go. But I don't think that will ever go away, because I think there's a need to be entertained is one way to say it. You know, just inspired, stimulated by these masters of painting from many, many years ago. It could be, you know, from the 1400s. I mean, 600 years ago, there are paintings that are just beautifully preserved. And, you know, not everything has to appeal to you, but I do think that looking at paintings and just taking some time and letting it sink in, I think it can be health-giving, and or you can feel like other people understand where you're coming from. So, you know, it might be something where you're seeking some simpatico with others, and or you might just need something new and fresh to look at. But that's in part why I chose this today, because you know, you can create your own art and sort of attract, bring in some of your own desired energy and wavelengths. And I liked a little bit about what this author said at one point. I think it was about, she was showing maybe some flowers or something, and it might have been in the very beginning. And she said something to the degree that it might not look finished, you know, when you finish with these paintings, but that's not the point. That Asian art is really, it's about balancing the white space with the subject matter and to see the overall effect. It's as much about the white space as it is about what you paint. So, you know, there is an entity, and that is the white space. So the balance, you know, is what you're going after. The composition is as important as, you know, how you actually paint it. And I hope I can find where she talks about this to a degree. Because I just thought it was really pretty sweet how it comes about. but but anyway, I think she basically says something like, just put your soul into it. You really just want to paint enough so that it looks like the subject matter is expressing their soul, their essence. And so it doesn't have to be detail for detail, but it's almost, it's like I said before, it's almost what you don't paint as much as what you do paint. And that's what I think is so interesting. Not that Western art doesn't have that. You know, I've heard lots of talks about the different compositions that certain artists made and how important, you know, what they chose and how they chose to put it on their canvas was amazing. But it's just interesting. You know, I think there's definitely a slightly different attitude. And I'm going to say one thing. I mean, there are many different types of Chinese brush painting, but I'm of the school that, you know, I like that you don't have any future and you don't have any past when you're painting. You're just in the moment. And you never go back to retrace the painting. What you paint is what you have. And, you know, there isn't a lot of this fussiness with extreme details. Now, some painters do draw out the subject matter with pencil, and then some of them even outline in black ink and then fill it in with color ink. And to me, that's not as spontaneous. That's not the effect I'm going for. I like the spontaneity and being in that moment and not visiting the past. You know, once you've made a stroke, if it's a mistake, well, you're going to have to somehow work it in or just leave it, because, gosh, sometimes nature kind of, you know, grows things and you think, wow, you know, how did that come about? But every so often, you know, it comes about that way. So it's I really like the fact that you have to just concentrate on the here and now, on the present moment. And that's a good exercise, whatever you do. It sort of wakes your right side of your brain up, and it allows for that side of your brain to express itself. And I just think that's marvelous. Now, there are some very simple things that you can try. For example, you can try a dragonfly, and I'm going to try to walk you through this. And this is not in the book. In the book, there are two other types of dragonflies, but this one is pretty easy. You're just going to, like, choose a color palette, you know, like you might want to do a blue and violet kind of thing. You've seen dragonflies maybe, and some of them are these brilliant greens or these brilliant blues. I mean, they're beautiful. And so you're just going to make a circle, tiny circle, and then like an oval. So just like one stroke, maybe going to the right and then to the left again to make it an oval. And then you're just going to go like one, two, three, these little dots behind that, one, two, three. So the first one, the first like circle is kind of like the head. And then that other part is the, you know, the thorax. And then the last part is kind of what you paint and to represent its tail. Now, all you do when you paint the wings is you're going to load up your brush with the color that you want. And you don't want it to be like drippy wet. You want it to be, you know, full. But think about a dragonfly's wings. They are transparent. So you kind of want like a wash effect. Well, anyway, you can practice and see how you like it. But you just take the brush, point it towards the body, like you're going to, your right hand, if you're right-handed, is going to be above the body, and you place the tip right next to the body, and you just place the whole brush tip down, like the whole brush head down. So you're making an impression with the brush head itself. And you do that one more time to the right, because they have two sets of wings. And then you do it on the other side. You do that same thing. And then you can put right in front of the head just two little tiny dots, and those are its eyes. And if you stand back and you look at that, and you can even put like a little curve to it if you want, like it's in the middle of, stopping or something. But in any case, it's okay. They are fairly straight most of the time when they're flying. But you've just created your own little creature, you know, out of a colorful medium. And you can, like I said, you could do that on the watercolor paper or newspaper. But that's a very simple demonstration of, just some basic shapes and how you can create something, you know, very, it can look quite alive, you know, in and of itself. So that's why I encourage you not only to look at these YouTube videos or other books, but I really urge you to try to pick up, get your own supplies. Now, Michaels has Chinese brushes. You just have to make sure that they connect. You know, like some of them, the heads have fallen off and they're cheaply made. So I would actually suggest going to an art supply place, to see about some higher quality brushes. The brushes are fairly important, but you'll see as you go along what you need. If the small one doesn't work to your desire and the fat one does, you know, that's fine. A place that specializes in Chinese brushes will have a variety of different animal hair or synthetic hair that you can choose. And the main thing is you want the brushes to be stiff. In fact, you're going to have to soak it in water a little bit before you ever use it, because it's really stiff. But never leave it overnight in water. So those are the main things: some paper, some brushes, and some ink and colors to use, and you're off. So I think that sometimes just dabbling with colors can really be pretty cool. Some people have never picked up a brush and tried to paint. And for those especially, I would encourage you. I mean, who's watching, right? And who cares anyway? I mean, it's something you can do for yourself, and never mind what everybody else thinks. One of the basic things that you see that all Chinese brush books have is how to do bamboo. And that's one of those really basic things that if you can, you know, learn how to do those basic things, I think you'll be very pleased with yourself, because it can turn into a nice composition, and it can really be quite beautiful. So I was thinking that I might, you know, want to just walk you through the beginnings of brush strokes, and see what we can do here. For this, you really just need black ink and water. You need one small thing of water to keep it clear with water, and that is just to wet the brush and get the tip in shape. And the other one should be more of a big cup or a glass or bucket, and that's to rinse out you know, your brush when you need to. And sometimes you do want to just realign your tips. So, you know, you could do that in the dirty water rather than the clean water. But if your brush is clean, then you can go ahead and use the clean water. So basically, you just load up your brush with, you know, some black ink, but it's really better to have a bit of a drier brush so that it looks realistic, because in nature, you know, you'll see like some are have these big like sort of striations in the bamboo, and some are darker, and you know, some maybe the sunlight is going onto one part and so it actually looks kind of white. So what you would do is you just sort of place your brush, I would hold it vertical, and then place the brush tip to the left and the rest of it down, and then take the whole brush and push it up about an inch or maybe 2 inches. This is going to be one of the segments. And then I usually just kind of go a little bit up and down, and then take it with the tip off to the left, and then do that one more time. So it's going to look like bones. So you kind of place the brush on top of the last one, pull it up, and then sort of stop and pick it up to the left. It can look like a little thorn is coming off of the edge of the top part of each bone. So if you did that, you know, 4 or 5 times without adding ink, you can see at the end you'll start to have some drier looking parts of the bamboo, and that's as it should be. That's the basic stalk of the bamboo. Now, at each nodule, you know, where the thorn is or the end of each bone part, you're going to take the smaller brush, and you do basically, it's going to come out of that nodule. You know, that's how they grow. And you're going to do a smaller version of what you just did, thin. And these are going to be the stems to the leaves that grow out of the bamboo stalk. Okay, so you're going to do the same thing, but much smaller. And, you know, it could have like 1, 2, 3 nodes. And then off the first one, off of the second one, you know, the first one's on the node itself, and the second one, you can put another, you know, little grouping of bones, and again. And then you're going to practice, you know, this is very quick, but you're going to practice the leaves. Now, the leaves, they kind of take the tip of the brush, and then you sort of run it down, and then you pick it up. It's sort of like an airplane going up into air, so that the end of the leaf is tipped. It has a tip to it. So one side is attached to the stem of the bamboo, and then you're going to go up into the air, and you're going to make some that you think, you know, how would they be on the bamboo? They're kind of, you know, one or two to each part of the stem, for example. This definitely is something you would want to see, like, from a YouTube video. But after you attach at least one stem with a bunch of leaves, and you can add a few small leaves just to make it, you know, look fuller. Then the last thing you basically do is, in between each node of the fat bamboo stalk, you're going to make, it kind of looks like the horns of a bull almost, okay? So you're going to go like down to the right and then back to the left up. So you have one horn is the down, and then over and then up. And you're doing that right at the seam of the two nodes of the bamboo. And that's what kind of makes it really look like it's a segment that's grown. So once you do that, that is your bamboo. But I probably practiced my bamboo for, you know, at least a couple of hours, you know, maybe like 1.5 hours for this one class, and then probably almost a whole another class before, and I still didn't get the leads until the future. But you can be the judge for yourself of how you're doing, and the fact that you're trying anything at all, I think, is a wonderful thing. And just to let you know, the remainder of this book, they do have flowers. It's amazing how easily you can make some of these flowers and leaves and stalks. There's a camellia, a poinsettia, a bird of paradise, and then she goes into insects, butterfly, her version of dragonfly, and then a couple of versions of a bee, doing different things. And one of the cool things, I think, is a fish. It's kind of like the koi that they do, the colorful koi that you'll see sometimes in somebody's garden or fish garden. Pretty easy to make that. Just some really basic strokes, three or four, and then like one line down the back in black, and two little black sort of circles for its eyes at the top, and there you go, and there's a fish, and there's a little composition here that has like two orange colored fish and two black, and then one behind that that's kind of gray, and then it looks like there might be stones or something in amongst them, just sprinkled throughout a little bit. And there's no water, so the white is what is the water. And that's what makes it so interesting. Like, you just paint these fish on the page, a couple of rocks, and you have this composition of these fish, and the water, it gets understood as water magically. So that's, in here. And then they have things that I've seen, and some things I haven't seen. They have a Cocker Spaniel. A panda, I've tried a panda before. This is a slightly different kind. A kitten, I think this one is probably something that I would like to try because the result is so cute. It's just a curled up little sleeping cat or kitten. But, you can color it maybe the way your cat is. And there's a frog. It looks like a poison dart frog on top of an anthurium flower, and that's really interesting looking, and then a rabbit. So it's one of the things about Japanese brush painting, sumi-e, or Chinese brush painting, they really do break things down to their essence. So there is not necessarily every single detail, but there's enough of a suggestion to allow you to recognize what that is. And that's what I think is so amazing. It's just, some simple strokes, and voila, here you have, it looks like these beautiful plants growing. A lotus flower and a bee. First they take you through the through the lily pad itself. And then they take you through the lotus flower, and then they have you add some stalks and a couple more parts of flower, and then they have you add a couple of bees. It might be three. No, one is the center of the flower, and then a couple of bees. And if you really get into this, you can even go to a Chinese bookstore and ask if you can anyway order a chop. A chop is the signature that you do in the lower right hand corner of your painting. It's usually done in red ink. So you put that, stamp into the red ink, and then you stamp it. And then if you know some Chinese writing that would refer maybe to your name or some description of you, you can make that above there. There are so many people that are of Chinese descent that you could probably ask for some help in those regards. But that's really what makes it so authentic, is that that chop. And and continuing on with what is presented here. She has a horse, She has some penguins, which really look so cute. And then a calico cat. And she's put the calico cat underneath a sprig, it looks like maybe a tree, of cherry blossoms or plum blossoms. That's a big theme in plum branch, yeah. Big theme in Asian painting. And what the cat's turned around to look at is this orangey-colored butterfly that's caught the cat's attention. So she takes you through how to make the plum blossom, the branch, and then the butterfly itself, so you have actually a composition. So it's really nice. I have to take more time myself to just do something like this. But I do think it's a very worthwhile effort. It helps you to calm down and de-stress and to think about so many different other things than you might have to think about during the course of your day and your week. There's also a magnificent tiger that she shows you how to do. Now, my feeling is that's probably going to be fairly advanced, but depending on what your, you know, ability is to draw, because she lightly sketches the lion or the tiger first, and then there's the business of the stripes. You know, how do you do the stripes? She has a pretty realistic looking tiger, I have to say. So it's pretty nice, pretty interesting. And then a monkey. You know, Asian people love monkeys for some reason. Maybe they're just, you know, so human-like in some of their expressions. This is a tailed monkey. It looks like it might be a macaque or something like that. I can't be sure. But it's brown and has kind of a bluish mask, blue-gray mask on its front face. But it's on a big branch of what looks like it might be a persimmon or a peach tree. I don't know. Oh, it is a peach. So she's teaching you how to paint peaches. And, of course, the leaves of the peach tree are different from the leaves of the cherry tree or the plum tree and so on. So, and this is the other thing. You can load up your brush with two colors. One, for example, is kind of a reddish, deep reddish, a little bit of orange, and then on the right side, a little strip of maybe almost like a lime green, except more watered down. And then so when you make your brush strokes, it comes out like with a dark part of the peach and then a lighter side of the peach. You have two different strokes, and one of those strokes is going to be with the greener side. So it is cool. And then you can also just dip the tip of the brush stroke into another color, and you can have all kinds of effects with that as well. So I just, again, wanted to encourage you to think a little differently. Maybe even if you just are from a small town, there are probably any number of galleries or small museum in your town that you can visit. There's, oh my gosh, National Gallery of Art, I believe it's nga.gov. I believe they have a huge amount online. So you can look through as many paintings as your heart desires. You can think of your own composition. You can think of how this, you know, one makes you feel as opposed to that one. I just encourage you to pick up a paintbrush and try. The rest of this book has, you know, a few other animals and flowers, but for the most part, it's what it offers you. And so, you know, I just, I think, for example, even in D.C., there's a Hirshhorn Museum, and it has modern art. It has abstract, modern, it has a sculpture garden. So it doesn't have to be realistic or realism that you look at. It could just be, you know, a Kandinsky that's kind of abstract and you're not sure what it is about. But a lot of times painters just paint to evoke a certain emotion from you. And it's yours to to do with what you want. It doesn't have to be the emotion that was meant for you to experience. So it's just really a personal experience between you and the painting. But by the same token, I want to say that sculptures are indeed very interesting too, and just mixed media as well. So we have a Renwick gallery in town that does like crafts and textiles and things, very beautiful, interesting, more updated sort of recent art. And we have a textile museum which does a lot of textiles from different parts of the country. Those can be also very stimulating and inspiring, the color combinations, the shapes, all of those things. So, you know, even though this is like realism, the Chinese brush art, you can take it and do whatever you'd like with it. If you want to just do splashes of different color, or, you know, have an abstract like river with people floating on top of it or something, it could be whatever you want. So just want to, you know, make sure that you feel kind of free of any limitation. And I do highly recommend, I'm a little bit without my total Wi-Fi capability today, but when I get it fixed, I'm going to, you know, research exactly what kind of paintings and sculptures there are reproduced, you know, online, because sometimes getting a feel for great composition is about looking at a whole bunch and or copying a whole bunch to get the feel of the way the picture kind of weighs, you know? So, you know, I don't know if you know what year you were born in, but like, for example, if you were born in the year of the horse, you could try to make a horse, you know? I have a scroll, a Chinese scroll that someone gave me years and years ago. It's very sweet of them. And it's a big horse, and then it's you know, occupies maybe a foot tall, and then the rest of the scroll is green, and it's, you know, it's unwrapped, unrolled, and it, you know, ends with a piece of wood inside the whatever you call it, the green, I think it's a form of, you know, thicker paper. But that, you know, is a cool thing to do. You could make your own scroll with your own picture of the year that you were born. My husband thought he was 1 year, but he found out that particular year, the new year started later or something. So he was actually at the end of the year of the dragon. So he, for a long time, thought he was something else, but then it turned out he was born in the year of the dragon, which I guess is quite auspicious. I'm not sure. But, you know, that would be an interesting thing to learn how to, you know, draw in a Chinese brush painting. Wow. But, you know, if you think it, you can probably do it. So I hope I'm answering ahead of time what some of your questions could be. I must have 4 or 5 different Chinese brush painting books around my house. I know I've given a couple away. One of my cousin's husband is a painter, and he is, I gave him a book on Chinese brush painting, and so I know he has a bunch of paintings hanging throughout, you know, their house, but it is interesting, and because when I gave it to him, my mother was like, "Hey, that's a good book on Chinese brush painting." I was like, "Yes, it is, Mom, and I'm giving it away." So I think I ended up giving her another book on Chinese brush painting, but she's the one that's really been doing quite a bit of painting. Lately, not as much Chinese brush or simier, but she really does a nice job with oils and also lately acrylic. So, but she had done previous to that quite a bit of simier. So it's just kind of nice. Now, I just want to read to you a little bit about Lucy Wang's background. Artist Lucy Wang was born in Taiwan and graduated from the National Taiwan College of Art in Taipei, Taiwan, where she studied with several Chinese painting masters. In 1993, an invitation from the Museum of Arts and Sciences in Macon, Georgia, brought Lucy to the United States, and she continues to exhibit in both countries. She taught Chinese brush painting for more than 20 years in Taiwan and the United States, and she now teaches at her studio gallery in San Diego and at the University of California, San Diego Craft Center. Lucy is a popular demonstrator for art groups and a frequent juror at art exhibitions. Lucy's educational television program, The Magic of Chinese Brush Painting, is broadcast on several San Diego cable television stations. Her books, Chinese Brush Painting and The Art of Watercolor, are published and distributed worldwide by Walter Foster Publishing, Inc. Recently, she blended her Chinese painting background with Western painting techniques to develop an innovative style of three-dimensional watercolor on silk. This new style has received national recognition on the Discovery Channel's Lynette Jennings, Design and Home, and Garden TV's Our Place. So that's kind of interesting that she innovated her own technique, because one thing I always think about when they say, you know, copy the master, copy the master, copy the master. You know, if you always copy the master in exactly what they do and you never vary, then you probably are not inclined to innovate. So it's like I was saying, you could probably do Chinese brush painting with like a Kandinsky style, you know, art, and that would be something new as well. So she had enough Western art and influence to know to the influence to, you know, go out of the bounds of normalcy and try something innovative. So bully for her, and hopefully she's still in the San Diego area, and maybe you can direct some questions to her. I think this was published in 2004, but also in 2012. So that's nice to know. It wasn't too long ago. So hopefully you will have a great rest of the afternoon and the rest of the week. And I will talk to you same time next weekend. And hope everything's okay. Save your questions. It's been a pleasure talking with all of you. Thanks, and good luck with your painting and your very first painting. Bye now.